Hi, hello, and welcome everyone. Thanks for attending this session on Azure Platform Automation. My name is Anil Desai, and I'm a Microsoft MVP in the area of Hyper-V. But that's enough about me. Your presenter today is Trevor Sullivan, who's been awarded the Microsoft MVP Award for Windows PowerShell. You can find a ton of content on his website on trevorsullivan.net, and he also posts frequently on Twitter and using @PCGeek86. I'll be your moderator during the session, so if you have any questions or comments, feel free to post them. Trevor has a ton of content and demos as well to present, so if we're unable to get to any of your questions, we'll follow up using the recorded version of the presentation and slides on channel9.com. And also, in the unlikely event that he makes any mistakes, Trevor has recently traveled above 14,000 feet in Colorado, but I actually think we're going to be just fine, so I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Trevor, and he's going to talk about the Azure Platform Automation.
Anil, thank you for that great introduction. My name is Trevor Sullivan, and I am a Microsoft MVP for Windows PowerShell. Thank you to Anil Desai for working with me today on the moderation of this session. So please feel free to ask your questions, and he'll take care of you in the moderation window. So today we're going to be talking about automation of the Microsoft Azure Public Cloud Platform using the Windows PowerShell automation language. Before we get started, I always like to take a few minutes to talk about social media and encourage people to get involved in a variety of social media channels. There's a lot of great ways you can get involved in the community, including publishing your own videos on YouTube or watching other videos on YouTube. There's Microsoft MSDN and TechNet discussion forums where you can get help directly from product team members at the Microsoft Azure team. GitHub is being used more and more by Microsoft as a development platform and source code repository to help them track issues with their source code and to help engage the community and encourage community contributions to their projects. One of the projects that we're going to be talking about today is the Microsoft Azure PowerShell module, and that's available on GitHub, and there's a URL at the end of this presentation with a link to that. You're encouraged to go ahead and download the Azure PowerShell module from that GitHub repository, get it installed, and work with it, which is what we're going to be talking about here today. And you can also file any issues or feedback items that you want to file towards the product team's direction and help encourage them to make the end user experience of that PowerShell module even better. The Stack Exchange Network, most people are familiar with. It's a question and answer discussion forum, great place to find information. It's organized in a very structured way that helps you to find questions and answers that are relevant to the platforms that you work with. And then finally, there's Twitter, which is a really great way to publish nuggets of information. You can use Twitter hashtags such as PowerShell and Azure and Cloud and a variety of other hashtags to help identify topics. And so I would strongly encourage you, if you're not already signed up for Twitter today, to get involved, to get out there and share your knowledge with the community and help to promote the Microsoft Azure Public Cloud and PowerShell automation language. You can follow me on Twitter at PCGeek86. I tweet way too much, probably up to 26 or 27,000 tweets since December of 2008 when I first signed up. You can also follow my blog at trevorsullivan.net where I publish several articles a month on PowerShell and desired state configuration and automating the Microsoft Azure Public Cloud, which is a topic that I'm particularly passionate about. Furthermore, if you want to email me, I'm an independent consultant and I'm available for projects, so feel free to reach out at trevor@trevorsullivan.net. So that's enough about social media. Let's move on and talk about why Azure. So before we start talking about automating the Microsoft Azure platform, we should really try to understand what the benefits of the Microsoft Azure Public Cloud are. First is elasticity, and elasticity basically refers to the ability to scale your existing resources, such as virtual machines or platform as a service websites or SQL databases and a variety of other cloud services. It basically means that you can scale up on demand and then scale down those resources to reduce your costs during off-peak hours. The cloud also offers flexibility, and flexibility really focuses on the ability to rapidly provision as much or as little infrastructure as you need. The cloud is also low cost. You can store data, gigabytes of data. You can run virtual machines. You can run SQL databases in the cloud for very low cost. And finally, there's no startup or shutdown costs. So if you're interested in the cloud today and you're not really using it, you can sign up for free, and you don't actually pay anything until you start consuming resources in the cloud. We should also try to make a business case for Azure. So you need to ask yourself questions like, where is my revenue coming from? If your business model is not primarily IT focused, or even if it is, you may benefit from moving your infrastructure to the cloud. Is the IT team capable of providing business value rapidly? Is the IT team at your organization able to rapidly respond to the demands of business customers? If you are looking at purchasing new hardware to replace aging server hardware in your data center, you may benefit from simply retiring that hardware and moving your infrastructure up to the cloud. You also need to consider what the soft costs of your data center are, such as real estate, infrastructure, temperature control, air conditioning, electrical, water, fire suppression, and all these other different services that make up your data center. And when you offload these costs to the cloud, you're really taking full advantage of the infrastructure that Microsoft has built worldwide. And then the last question I wanted to mention is, do I have a disaster recovery plan? Have I tested my disaster recovery plan, and what is that disaster recovery plan costing me? Do I have a secondary data center that I'm managing? Do I have a DR provider that has a separate data center? Sometimes these costs can add up very significantly, and using the tenets of flexibility and elasticity in the cloud, we can dramatically reduce our disaster recovery costs. So what kind of tasks might I use the cloud for, and might I want to automate using PowerShell? Well, if you have a developer, the gears start turning in his head, and he says, I really want to start leveraging the cloud. So how can I do that? Well, the developer may want to spin up a web application in the cloud and point that at a SQL database. Additionally, he may have source code hosted on a service like Bitbucket or GitHub, and he wants to automatically deploy his application code to his website every time that he commits a change. Additionally, he may want to spin up multiple instances of his website to make it highly available, highly performant, and locally available to users across the world. From an IT pro perspective, you've got an IT pro and he starts thinking, hey, what can I use the cloud for? And today, that IT pro has lots of on-premises servers, and he would like to be able to put those servers up into the cloud. So what the IT pro does is he uses PowerShell to spin up virtual machines, spin up virtual networks, spin up his Azure Blob storage where his virtual machine hard drives are located, and then he also is able to automatically spin up remote app to publish business applications to his end users. So these are some of the tasks that a developer or an IT pro might want to leverage in Azure. As we look at the Microsoft Azure platform, we have a few different usage models. We have the most simple, which is infrastructure as a service. This allows us to pick up our virtual machines that are running on our on-premises hardware, and we can move those directly to the cloud. The platform as a service model is a more lightweight solution because we remove the abstraction layer of managing the virtual machines. So basically, the platform as a service allows us to deploy our applications directly in the cloud, deploy other resources such as SQL databases or event hubs, and not have to worry about managing the underlying infrastructure. And then the most lightweight model is SaaS applications. SaaS applications is basically a service where you can sign up using a subscription model and consume that service without actually having to manage the application or the underlying infrastructure. So how do we interface with Azure from an automation perspective? Well, the Azure platform has two different APIs that are available to it today. There's the Service Management API, which is an XML-driven API that uses imperative statements. And then there's the new Azure Resource Manager API, And you can interface with Azure using either API. Now, the Azure Resource Manager API provides several benefits, such as the ability to do infrastructure as code, or cloud infrastructure as code, rather. And it also provides the imperative statements that the Service Management API offers as well. Sitting on top of those APIs are a series of .NET libraries that make up the Microsoft Azure SDK. And then finally, on the far left there, we have PowerShell, which is what we're going to be talking about today. And PowerShell sits on top of those .NET libraries and abstracts the interfacing with the Service Management and Azure Resource Manager APIs. So just a quick look at the differences between Azure Resource Manager and Azure Service Management is that Azure Resource Manager is basically the new API that Microsoft is providing to interface with Azure. There's actually an old and new portal as well. So there's the old manage.windowsazure.com portal, and there's also the new Azure Resource Manager targeted portal.azure.com. The Azure Resource Manager API uses a declarative JSON syntax, and what's really cool about this is that we can actually store our JSON represented cloud resources in our source code repositories and enable revision control of our cloud infrastructure. The same imperative APIs that are offered by the Azure Service Management API are also offered by Azure Resource Manager. And a really cool feature of the Azure Resource Manager API is that we now have the ability to establish what are called resource groups. So within a single Azure platform subscription, we're able to carve out different resources into different resource groups, and then we can actually track our billing of those resources separately in each resource group. So this is very useful if you're an IT team because you can then bill back your different departments using separate resource groups for each one. So some best practices that I would like you to keep in mind as you start working with the Azure platform from PowerShell is make sure that you keep the Azure PowerShell module updated. There's about a release every 3 to 4 weeks of the Azure PowerShell module on the GitHub project page that we talked about earlier. And so you want to make sure that you're always running the latest version. There's constantly new commands, there's constantly new fixes that are coming out, and so you want to just make sure that you put it on your calendar to update that module every few weeks. There's a couple of different methods of authenticating to the Microsoft Azure platform. If you've been working with the Service Management API for a while, you're probably familiar with the concept of a published settings file or certificate authentication, management certificate authentication. So that method of authentication is actually kind of going away in favor of authentication using Azure Active Directory. So basically, you go into your subscription, you set up an Azure Active Directory user account, you then grant that user account the co-administrator access to your Azure platform subscription, and then that's the credential that you'll use from PowerShell to automate the provisioning and management of any cloud resources. And then a third technique, or a third best practice that I recommend people use when they're writing automation scripts against Azure is to use the concept of PowerShell splatting. So PowerShell splatting is basically the ability to take a very long PowerShell command that has maybe 5 or 6 or maybe 10 different parameters on it. And we'll take a look at some examples a little bit later on how this works. But what you can do is store these parameters in a hash table, and then you can use this technique called splatting to actually apply those parameters onto each PowerShell command. So when we get into talking about some of the feature-specific automation, you'll see that splatting is a very useful technique. So if you're new to the Azure platform, how do you get started with automating it? Well, the first thing is that you need to sign up for Azure. So if you don't have an Azure subscription today, you'll need to go onto the Azure website and sign up for a subscription. And there's a couple of different ways you can do that. One is a pay-as-you-go subscription, or if your organization has an enterprise agreement with Microsoft, you can provision a subscription as part of your EA. Once you've got your Azure platform subscription provisioned, the next steps you'll need to follow in order to automate the platform are to download the Azure PowerShell module, get it installed, authenticate using that Azure Active Directory account we just talked about, and then you'll need to select the subscription that you want to manage. So if you have a Microsoft account or an Azure Active Directory account, your account may have access to multiple Azure subscriptions. So anytime that you're doing Azure Platform automation from PowerShell, you need to make sure that you select the correct subscription so you're not provisioning resources into the wrong subscription. So let's dive into the automation of several different Azure infrastructure resources. So the first resource I want to talk about is Azure Storage. The top level node in Azure Storage is called a storage account. And to create one, you simply call the new Azure Storage account command. Now, the Azure Storage service offers several different features. In order to access those features inside the storage account, each storage account has what's called a storage account key. And that key allows you to manage all of the resources inside that storage account. So in order to retrieve that key, we call the get Azure storage key command. We also have to create what's called a storage context, and that storage context is basically our credential that authorizes access to the storage account. In order to create that credential, we use the new Azure storage context command, and then we pass in the key that we just retrieved. The first feature that I'd like to talk about is the Azure Files feature. The Azure Files feature is basically a cloud-based SMB share that you can then attach to your virtual machines and share between them. So in the Azure Files feature, the first object that you need to create within the storage account is called a storage share, just like an SMB share. Once you've created the share, you can then go ahead and create directories and upload files into that SMB share using the Azure REST APIs. Next is the Blob Storage service, and the Blob Storage service is where your Azure virtual machines actually store their VHD files. So any management of your virtual machines that you're doing from outside the VM in the cloud is typically going to be done in Blob Storage. There's also a couple of developer features which we won't be too focused on today called Table Storage, which is like NoSQL in the cloud, and also Queuing Storage. The SQL database platform is another service that's provided in your Azure subscription. So rather than spinning up infrastructure virtual machines and going through the process of installing SQL Server and configuring all those options, you can actually simply spin up a SQL Server in the cloud. So the PowerShell commands are pretty straightforward. It's new Azure SQL database server. And then you can actually provision multiple SQL databases on top of that using the new Azure SQL database command. The new Azure SQL database command allows you to configure your SQL databases with different performance levels depending on your application's requirements. Finally, you can also automate the process of configuring firewall rules using the SQL database firewall commands to restrict which nodes are able to access your SQL database. Virtual networks are another fundamental building block of your cloud-based resources. And the top-level node is simply a virtual network. You can create a virtual network that doesn't contain any nodes inside of it, but you do have to actually carve up that virtual network into individual subnets. So typically, your virtual network will start out with a top-level address space that's very large, and then you'll carve that up into smaller subnets to accommodate your network infrastructure. Each of the virtual networks is created in a particular region in Azure, of which there's 19 today, everywhere from North Central US to Western Europe to Southeast Asia. There's a whole host of regions where you can simply provision virtual networks, and then you can connect them together. In the old Azure Service Management module, there's several different commands that you can use to manage virtual networks. The get Azure VNet config command and the set and remove Azure VNet config commands are all responsible for configuring virtual networks in the service management API. Take note, however, that this is dramatically different from the new Azure Resource Manager APIs that allow you to actually build virtual networks using an object-oriented format. So back in the old service management interface, you actually had to submit a large XML document that had your virtual networks pre-configured inside of it. In the new Azure Resource Manager API, we have new commands that allow us to build the subnets and build the virtual networks and build load balancers using an object-friendly interface. You can also create virtual network gateways And you can also resize the gateways depending on your bandwidth requirements. And this allows you to do site-to-site VPN or point-to-site VPN from your on-premises network directly up into your cloud-based virtual network. Network security groups are a feature that enable you to secure your Azure virtual networks and Azure virtual machines. A network security group is a top-level node that's created in a particular region, and it needs to be created in the same region where the resource is that you're trying to secure. So, for example, if you create a network security group in the Western U.S. region, then you also need to create a virtual network in the same West U.S. region. Network security groups can be applied directly to individual subnets inside a virtual network or to individual virtual machines. A network security group is made up of individual network security group rules, and each rule is responsible for either allowing or disallowing traffic based on the source IP, source port, and destination IP and port. So if we have a virtual network and we put a single subnet into it and deploy several virtual machines into it, we can create the network security group and then call either set Azure virtual network config, subnet config, or set Azure virtual network subnet config or VM config to assign that network security group to either the subnet or an individual virtual machine. Now, it's important to understand that only a single network security group can be applied to a subnet or a VM. So you can't have multiple network security groups assigned to each of those entities. If you do need to build multiple rules, just build a network security group and embed those rules as individual NSG rules inside that network security group, and then apply that to the entity that you want to manage. So Azure virtual machines are obviously a fundamental part of the Azure infrastructure as a service. And we're going to take a look at the two different APIs, the service management and the Azure Resource Manager APIs, as it pertains to virtual machines. So in the old service management world, you had to establish a cloud service container, which is basically a container that offers a virtual machine a public routable IP address as well as a public DNS name. You can put up to 50 virtual machines inside of each cloud service container, and the cloud service container also provides load balancing capabilities. So if you have web servers that you want to load balance or SQL servers that you want to load balance, that load balancer is offered as a service from the cloud service entity. There's also an image gallery in Azure that you can use to deploy virtual machines from. So there's everything from Windows images to Linux images. There's Ubuntu images and SUSE Linux Enterprise Edition images. And there's a whole bunch of different virtual machine images that you can simply use without having to necessarily bring your own virtual hard drive. However, that is an option as well. You can also bring your own VHDs from on-premises. You can perform a conversion process on your VMware VMs and port them over to being Azure-compatible VHDs. In the Azure Resource Manager module, a virtual machine is actually a standalone entity, and you create it using the new Azure VM config command. You configure the operating system using set Azure VM operating system, and then you attach an operating system disk using the set Azure VM OS disk command. You also need to attach a VM network interface because this is not provided to you out of the box. This is something that needs to be explicitly added. You also need to make sure that you have a virtual network to deploy the virtual machine into before actually creating it. So there's a few different commands you want to be familiar with anytime that you're creating a virtual machine in Azure. On the service management side, there's the get Azure VM image command. This allows you to query that image gallery to look at a list of all the Windows and Linux virtual machine images that are available out of the box. The new Azure VM config command creates the initial virtual machine configuration in memory without actually creating the virtual machine in the Azure platform. The add Azure provisioning config command allows you to specify the basic provisioning details, such as the credential that you want to use to log into the virtual machine, if you want to join the virtual machine to a domain, or the same thing for Linux. If you want to specify the username and password or SSH key pair, the add Azure provisioning config command is how you would do that. Once you've created that virtual machine configuration in memory in your PowerShell session, you'll call the new Azure VM command to actually instantiate that virtual machine configuration in the cloud. On the Azure Resource Manager side, the commands are broken down a little bit in more detail. There's actually four different commands you will use to find the virtual machine image that you want to provision a VM from. You need to start with the Get Azure VM Image Publisher command, and a publisher might be, for example, a Microsoft Windows server. And then you would get the Azure VM Image Offer, which is basically the addition of Windows Server that you want to provision. And then the Get Azure VM Image SKU command allows you to actually select which version of that image you want to select. And then finally, the Get Azure VM Image command is what actually retrieves the image metadata from the cloud and then allows you to call the Set Azure VM OS Disk command and pass in that image name. Similar to the Service Management module, there's a new Azure VM config command. And that just basically gives us what is the size of the virtual machine, what's the name of the virtual machine. And then we can call Set Azure VM Operating System, which allows us to configure the credentials, which is similar to the Add Azure Provisioning Config command. We also need to, as we discussed in the last slide, add a VM network interface because VMs in ARM don't inherently have network interfaces attached to them. So we actually have to create that network interface and then add it separately. And then finally, once we've got this entire configuration in memory prepared, we call the new Azure VM command, very similar to service management, to actually create that virtual machine in the cloud. There's several extensions that you can also apply to your virtual machines in both APIs. The first and most useful extension is the VM Access extension. So this is very useful if you've forgotten your credential to log into one of your virtual machines. So what you do is you call Get Azure VM to retrieve the virtual machine configuration from the cloud. You call the Set Azure VM Access extension command to reset the username and password on that VM. And then finally, you call Update Azure VM, and that will actually tell the Windows Azure or Microsoft Azure guest agent to apply those new credentials to the operating system so that you can then either RDP or use PowerShell remoting to access that VM. Another extension you want to get familiar with is called the DSC extension. And the DSC extension allows us to integrate using PowerShell desired state configuration and apply PowerShell DSC configs or configuration documents directly to our Azure virtual machines using the Microsoft Azure guest agent. So the way that this works is you call the publish Azure VM DSC configuration command, and that puts your DSC config up into an Azure blob container in Azure storage. Next, you'll call the set Azure VM DSC extension command, and that will configure the DSC extension on the virtual machine. Once that virtual machine's guest agent is aware of that DSC config in the cloud, it'll actually download it directly from blob storage and apply it locally on that VM. The last feature I want to talk about prior to jumping over to a demo is the Azure Automation Platform. So Azure Automation allows us to create an automation account, and inside that automation account, we can create what are called runbooks, which are essentially just PowerShell workflows that allow us to automate processes directly in the cloud. We don't have to rely on any on-premises infrastructure to automate these cloud jobs. So a runbook, again, is just a PowerShell workflow that contains all the logic of whatever process you want to automate. For example, you might want to resize a virtual machine at night to reduce costs. You might want to shut down certain virtual machines to reduce costs during certain hours. And you can schedule these runbooks to run on whatever schedule you want. So maybe at 8 o'clock in the morning, you resize your virtual machines up to a larger VM size that has maybe 8 cores and, you know, 50 gigs of RAM instead of 4 cores overnight. And you can also shut down virtual machines using the same process. So you might, at 8 p.m. in the evening, you might say, you know what, this is a non-critical virtual machine. Most of my users aren't really accessing this system, so I'm just going to go ahead and shut that down and save costs. So when you actually invoke a runbook in the cloud, it gets deployed to a runbook worker, and then the results of that workflow or that runbook are actually returned up to your automation account as a runbook job. And the Azure PowerShell module actually offers commands that allow you to retrieve the results of those runbook jobs, and you can automatically do something with those jobs, such as send yourself like an email report just to keep track of what's going on in that automation account. And finally, I wanted to mention a new feature that was just announced at Microsoft Ignite last week, which is basically a desired state configuration poll server in the cloud. This is a new feature that's still in early preview, and it allows you to essentially stage your PowerShell DSC configurations into your Azure Automation account, and then all of your Azure virtual machines can then go to that DSC poll server and pull down their configurations. So this is a little bit easier of a process than using the PowerShell DSC extension for Azure virtual machines, but it does give you another option or another channel to publish your DSC configs to your cloud VMs. So with that in mind, I would like to jump over to a couple of demonstrations here. So the first PowerShell code that I would like to show you is kind of like just getting set up, right? So maybe you're new to the cloud, maybe you've just signed up for Azure, you've just installed the Azure PowerShell module, and you need to know how to get started. Well, the first thing you're going to do is call the add Azure account command, which allows you to authenticate against the platform. Now, you don't have to specify any credentials to the add Azure account command. In fact, I can just call add Azure account, and it's going to pop up an authentication dialog that asks me for my credential. So you can either type a Microsoft account in here, or if you've already set up an Azure Active Directory account, you can use your Azure Active Directory user account to authenticate against your Azure subscription. After you call the add Azure account command, what happens is it imports all of your subscription data, very similar to the old publish settings file. Once you've got the authentication taken care of, you can call the get Azure subscription command, and this is going to show you a list of all of the Azure platform subscriptions that are available to your user account. So in a second here, we'll see the results of that. And essentially, I've got several different subscriptions here that I can use to provision cloud resources inside of. Once you've viewed a list of your subscriptions, you need to select a particular subscription to operate on. So in this case, I'm going to call select Azure subscription and then pass in the name of one of my subscriptions. Now it's important to note that the Azure subscription names are case sensitive. So if I were to use, for example, a little v here instead of a capital V, that would actually throw an error because there's no subscription matching that name. So just keep in mind that subscription names are case sensitive. In order to ensure that you've got the currently selected subscription is correct, you can just add the dash current switch parameter onto get Azure subscription. And so I can see that I've correctly selected my Visual Studio Ultimate Azure subscription. One technique that I like to use when automating things in Azure is sometimes you just want to see things in a small graphical interface. And PowerShell version 3 and later offer what's called the OutGridView command. And so what I can do is pipe the get Azure subscription command into OutGridView, and then pipe the result of that into select Azure subscription. And what this is going to do is it's going to pop up just a little dialog box. Actually, it's showing up down here. And this little dialog box allows me to just basically select one of my subscriptions in a small graphical interface, select OK, and then it'll go ahead and select that. Now, there's two different, when you install the Microsoft Azure PowerShell module, there's actually two different PowerShell modules that get installed. And the Azure PowerShell module actually implements its own custom switching mechanism. So while you can technically import both the Azure Resource Manager and the Azure Service Management module at the same time, this isn't supported directly out of the box as of today. So there's a special command called switch Azure mode, and you can specify either the Azure Resource Manager module or the Azure Service Management module. And when you call the Switch Azure Mode command, what happens is the opposing module actually gets unloaded from your session, and the module that you specified actually gets loaded in. So if I call Switch Azure Mode to Azure Resource Manager, then you will see that my Azure Resource Manager module is loaded. Whereas if I call Switch Azure Mode with the Service Management module and then call Get Module again, you'll see that just the regular Azure Service Management module is imported. So just be aware that if you are explicitly wanting to work with the Azure Resource Manager module, you do need to make sure that you're calling that Switch Azure Mode command. And as a best practice, at the top of any of your scripts, you should probably just make sure that you call that command just to make sure that you are in the correct module mode, basically. So I wanted to show a couple of demos here. I'm kind of running out of time. I've only got 14 minutes left. So what I'm going to do is actually jump over to the Azure Resource Manager example that demonstrates how to build a virtual network using the Azure Resource Manager interface. And we'll just kind of step through the code here. So what this script does, again, is just it builds a virtual network, and it creates a subnet inside of that virtual network. And we also talk about how to do network security group configuration here as well. So the first thing you always want to do is make sure that you are authenticated. What can happen is your token can expire, your cached token. So you want to make sure that you authenticate at the top of all of your scripts to the Azure platform. Using add Azure account, we already talked about that. You also want to make sure that you select your correct Azure subscription. So we also talked about, you know, we want to make sure that we're provisioning the resources that we're about to do in the correct subscription. My particular user account actually has access to 5 different subscriptions, so I need to make sure that I'm operating on the correct one to make sure that the billing is all handled correctly. As we just discussed just a minute ago, we need to make sure that we are in the Azure Resource Manager mode, because in this case, we are explicitly demonstrating functionality that exists exclusively in the Azure Resource Manager interface. So when you're in the Azure Resource Manager interface, you need to provision all of your resources in what's called a resource group. So we're actually going to use the new Azure Resource Group command here to provision a resource group in the Western European region. So when you, that's what happens when you don't follow your own directions. So I need to run the Switch Azure Mode command and make sure that I'm back in the Resource Manager mode, because the Resource Manager mode was not loaded. So now I'm going to call this new Azure Resource Group command. And all that's going to do is it's going to create this empty container that doesn't have any resources in it. But I'm basically just saying I want this container to eventually contain resources. So now that that container exists, I can start to create resources inside of it. Now, in the next section here, we're going to talk about how to create the actual virtual network. So when you build a virtual network, if you refer back to the diagram in my other slide, you have the virtual network is the top level object. However, you also have to specify subnets inside of that virtual network. So what we're going to do is we're actually going to build from the inside out rather than the outside in. So rather than creating the virtual network and creating subnets inside the virtual network, what we're going to do is we're going to declare our subnets first, and we're just going to add those to an array. So we've got two subnets here. One's going to be called web servers, and one's going to be called database servers. And we're going to provide two different /24 subnets for each of those subnets. So at this point, we still haven't actually created anything in the cloud. We're simply creating in-memory configurations for our subnets. Then the next thing that we do is we call the new Azure Virtual Network command. And if you look, one of the parameters to this command is actually called subnet. And the subnet parameter accepts an array of subnet objects, which we built here in this empty array. We then added the subnets to that empty array. So now we have an array that has two subnets in it. And we're actually going to pass in that array of subnets into that subnet parameter. As you can see, my address space for the virtual network overarches, so it's a 10.0/16 subnet. And that address space overarches the two subnets that I've provisioned inside of it. I'm also able to specify a couple of DNS servers that I want my Azure virtual machines to point to. I can specify the location of the virtual network, and then I also need to specify the name of the resource group where I want to provision that virtual network. So if you recall before, I created the virtual network right up here in the West, or the resource group in the West Europe region. And in this case, I'm actually going to provision that virtual network into that resource group in the same region. So if I were to run this command here, it's going to go ahead and create these two subnet objects. It's going to add them to that empty array. And then I'm going to build all of my parameters in this hash table here and call the new Azure Virtual Network command. Now, while that's running, I want to step back for a second here and talk about PowerShell splatting. So if you remember, one of my best practices that I suggested on one of the earlier slides is to use PowerShell splatting to define your parameters for each command. So if you were to imagine all of these command parameters specified on a single line, that could get pretty lengthy. So for example, I might call new Azure Virtual Network -name -resource group name -location -DNS server. And so as you can see, this line is becoming very long very quickly, right? Because I've got all these different parameters that I have to specify. So when we use PowerShell splatting, we can actually build all those parameters ahead of time in a what's called a PowerShell hash table or dictionary. We can assign that hash table to a variable, and then we can use the @ instead of the $ to reference this variable that contains the hash table. So that's PowerShell splatting in a nutshell, and it makes reading your code much, much easier. As you work with some other commands like these down here to build network security group rules, you're going to really start to see major benefits to this because you are declaring one parameter on each line instead of 10. So that's PowerShell splatting. So as you can see, this command has successfully returned, and we should now have a virtual network variable that contains our virtual network. As you can see, the provisioning state has been succeeded, the location is the Western European region, and the resource group name that we specified is that mvpconf2015-virtualnetwork. So if we were to go to the Microsoft Azure portal, let me just bring this up here really quick, we can actually go to the preview portal at portal.azure.com. And just to verify that that was actually created successfully, we can go to Virtual Networks version 2. And we can go to, mvpvconf. So this is our virtual network created in West Europe. And as you can see, that command succeeded successfully. We've got our DNS servers, we've got our address space, and everything is all good there. So there's our two subnets. So we're just using the portal in this case to validate that our work from PowerShell succeeded. Now that we've created the virtual network, we can create network security groups and network security rules inside that security group. So similar to our previous example, we're going to just create an empty array to hold our network security rules. We're going to declare a couple of hash tables that have our two rules in there. One of those rules is going to enable RDP access. The other one will enable HTTP access. We're going to call the special new Azure network security rule config in the Azure Resource Manager PowerShell module. And we're going to splat those parameters just like we did before and add them to this empty array. Once we've built that list of network security rules, we're going to create the outer object, which is the actual security group. We're going to create that in the same region as our virtual network. We're going to add those security rules through the security rules parameter. And then we also need to specify, again, the resource group name. You can also specify your own name for that network security group. And then you can simply instantiate it using PowerShell splatting again by calling new Azure Network Security Group. Once you've created the security group, you also need to assign it to a subnet. So we're going to use the set Azure Virtual Network subnet config command to assign the network security group to the virtual network that we created earlier. So let's go ahead and try this out and see if the demo gods are with me today. I'm just going to select that and hit F8 in the PowerShell ISE to run the selected code. So it's going to go ahead and just build out this network security group very quickly. Now if I take a look at the network security group variable, you can see that I've got a network security group that has successfully provisioned in my resource group. And the last thing I need to do is come down here and call set Azure Virtual Network subnet config to actually assign that to my subnet. So I think this is asking me for the subnet name. Actually, that command may not be completed. But in any case, sorry about that. Must have been in the middle of working on my demos. So essentially, though, we would actually use that command to assign the NSG to the subnet. So that's basically the building blocks of virtual networks in Azure Resource Manager. The process, again, is quite a bit different for the Azure Service Management interface, which just uses an XML file to control the virtual network config. So now that we've built out a virtual network, let's go ahead and take a very, very quick look. I think I've got about 5 minutes here. Let's take a very quick look at how to build virtual machines. So we're going to declare our resource group. We're going to use the exact same resource group that we already built out for the virtual network. We need to specify a storage account to contain the VHD files for the virtual machine. So I'm just going to go ahead and create that storage account. Then I need to actually figure out which image I want to provision the virtual machine from. So I'm going to call this series of commands. Image publisher, image offer, image SKU, and VM image to retrieve the image that I want. We're also waiting for that storage account to finish provisioning. Once we get the image, we need to specify a public IP address, and this is how we'll access the virtual machine across the internet. So we can provision a new dynamic virtual IP or public IP in the West Europe region, and that's a standalone entity. So that public IP address gets created in the resource group by itself. We assign it later on to the virtual machine. We also need to create a network interface. And so this is an actual network interface or a NIC on the VM. So we have to go through and create the NIC. We can specify the DNS servers for it. We can specify that public IP address that we just created to bind that public IP to the network interface. And then once we create that network interface, we can then create the Azure Virtual Machine configuration, specifying the virtual machine name and the virtual machine size. Once we create the basic virtual machine configuration, we want to configure the operating system using the administrative credential that we'll log into that system with, the name of the virtual machine. We're going to specify that it's a Windows VM. We're also going to tell it to provision the Microsoft Azure VM guest agent and switch on auto updating. We set the source image right here by specifying the publisher, offer, and SKU and version. And then we also need to give it a disk in our storage account. So in our cloud storage account, we need to tell it what the storage account is that we are going to assign this VM to. We're going to tell it that we want to create the new VHD file from an image. And then we're going to set that configuration on the VM. And then we also need to add the network interface that we created before to our virtual machine config. And then finally, after we've done all this configuration work, we can actually provision the virtual machine inside the resource group. So let's just come in here and let's just run this code really quick. So let's go ahead and grab the virtual machine image. So we're going to select an image publisher. In this case, we're going to choose Microsoft Windows Server as the publisher. Next, it's going to ask us for a VM image offer. And in this case, we just have one offer, which is Windows Server. And then the third step is to select the SKU. So the SKU is 2012 R2 Data Center Edition. And then the last step is to actually select the VM image version. And as you can see, there's a few different VM image versions here. So we're just going to choose the latest one, which is the April 2015 image. So now that we've got that image selected, we're just going to select all this code to do the VM configuration. We're going to get, I think, prompted for the credential for the VM. So basically, it's coming through here. It's it's actually going to prompt us for the virtual machine size. So we can select a standard A0 VM. These are all the different VM sizes available to me. And then I'm going to specify my administrative credential to log into that VM once it's done. So that's basically what the configuration of the VM looks like before it's actually been provisioned. And right now it's going out and actually creating that virtual machine using the parameters that I've specified. So as you can see, there's quite a few different commands that you need to be familiar with. Just make sure that you get familiar with new Azure VM config, set Azure VM operating system, set the source image, set the OS disk. You can also attach additional data disks on top of this, which I didn't do here. You want to add the network interface, and then finally instantiate the VM. So at a high level, that's your process for actually creating a virtual network and then a virtual machine inside that virtual network. So now that I'm out of time, I just wanted to finish up really quick and say call to action. If you're not already signed up for Azure today, go out and sign up for Azure. Go download and install the Azure PowerShell module from this GitHub project page right here. Make sure that you file any bugs or feedback just for user interface consistency with other PowerShell modules. Make sure that you put that feedback out on GitHub. And make sure you get involved on Twitter. So use the hashtags PowerShell, Azure, and PSDSE to talk about desired state configuration on Twitter. Get involved, be part of the discussion, and be part of the community. So thank you, everyone, for attending. I hope you learned something today, and enjoy the rest of the MVP Virtual Conference.